The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this October 9th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on what's turned out to be a gorgeous day in the Auburn Opelika area. Windy as all get out, but that's okay. The temperature's nice, the sun is out, and it's another great day to be on the airwaves. Lots to get to on this show this afternoon, talking all things college football. A little bit of basketball in there too, but mostly football today as we get closer to the weekend. A huge one across the SEC in college football. We're talking about that and a whole lot more for the next 2 hours. Christian, happy Thursday, sir. How are you, man?
Doing well, man. Thursday doesn't feel real. I don't know if it was the bye week last week or just looking forward to this weekend so much that I don't feel like it's only Thursday. I feel like it should be Friday, if not Saturday. And based on the work side of things, I would love for that to be the case. But no, we are almost to the weekend, but we're fired up to have another really, really good show for you. We're breaking down Georgia a little bit more here to start the show, kind of getting into a little bit more of the conversations that we weren't able to have yesterday. Again, just talking about some of the biggest strengths, a little bit more of the weaknesses for Georgia. Some really good names to know, both on the offensive and the defensive side of the football. And yeah, you mentioned it, a little bit of basketball news in there as well. Before we get to Brad Law of the Auburn Sports Network, we're going to get his thoughts on a whole lot of things, both Auburn and just college football in general, talking a little bit about the new portal transfer or the transfer portal window, get his reactions on everything around college football, around the SEC, before we dive into everything Auburn and Georgia. And then some just quick generic college football notes as there continue to be more and more wild cases and statements that come out of college football just about every single day. All of that before we talk with your man, Keith Etheridge of Auburn High School, here to start our number two.
Yep, so a lot to get to on today's show. Lots of guests on a Thursday afternoon, and so if you want to be a part of the show, now is the time to do so. Give us a call. You can get your thoughts in on today's program, 334-321-1390. Your picks for Auburn and Georgia, your feelings on Auburn and Georgia. If you think the Tigers can pull it off, have you convinced yourself at this point that it's going to happen for Auburn, or are you down in the dumps and saying ain't no way that Georgia will come in here and lose this football game? So you could give us a call right now, 334-321-1390. The text box is open all show long, so you can shoot us your comments there if you want to be a part of the show that way, at 334-784-1067. And we do begin, or I guess continue rather, looking at this Georgia team, because it's safe to say, and it seems like this is the narrative that is growing, and I don't want this to be a false sense of hope for anybody, but this Georgia team is beatable. We've seen it already this year. I can positively say we've seen that twice, but they only lost one of them, right? You saw Tennessee, they were very beatable. They just came back and did what Kirby Smart does.
Yes.
Against Alabama, you saw that they were beatable, and they still had chances and just couldn't quite pull it off. So this Georgia team, top to bottom, at all phases of the game is not as good as they've been in the past, but they're still very, very good.
They are. That you feel like they've made up ground where they haven't had it in a while, that being the receiver room. They spent a lot of focus on the receiver room. That being said, you feel like you almost took that with a little bit of a step down on the defensive front, or the defensive front seven, at least from what they are or what you're used to seeing with a Kirby Smart front seven, right? Where it's, you're almost in the backfield as the ball is being snapped. Your quarterback has pressure every single time that he tries to stand in the pocket. There's tackles for losses. You feel like you're second and 12 every single time when you try and run the football. But yeah, there are obviously some pros and some strengths that you've seen from this Georgia team that you haven't seen in the past, but there's also a little bit of a step down that you feel like other teams are at least doing their best to try and exploit, to try and come away with a win.
Yeah, I think the defensive line is the one that stands out to me as being not as good as they've been in the
past. It's wild to
say
that, like, the word that comes to mind is weaker, but it's still nowhere near the correct
term. Right, exactly. And you watch some of their games, and I think you can see the lack of pressure on quarterbacks. I think you can see some of those open gaps and holes in the secondary, depending on what formation they're running for this Georgia defense. But you also saw in both of the games where they were pressured against Tennessee and against Alabama, they made adjustments. They did what they had to do. Remember, Alabama did not score a single point in the second half a couple of weeks ago. Now, they still won the football game, but that said more about Georgia's offense than it did Georgia's defense, who, again, didn't allow a single point in the second half against the Alabama Crimson Tide. And you go and look at the Tennessee game, where they kind of did the same thing. Of course, that one went to overtime, but you give up 21 points in the first quarter, you give up just 20 points after that combined to Tennessee.
Well, that, and looking at last week in one of those games where, again, nobody was really expecting Kentucky to win this game in Sanford Stadium, but it was much more of a 21.5 points, 20.5. That's a lot for a team to overcome with that emotional hangover with the following week, the loss at home to Alabama. What is this Kirby team going to look like with a bunch of these guys not used to this feeling? Well, again, it was a 35-7 truthful game at the end of the third quarter. Kentucky was the only team to score in the fourth quarter with a touchdown pass with 2 minutes left in the game. And so that was just one of those garbage time touchdowns. So you feel like in three straight really big games that Georgia has played, the ability to go in after 30 minutes and make the second half adjustments, which is something that people have praised Kirby Smart and his ability with him and his staff to be able to do, but they've done such a good job this year. It just happens in ways that you haven't expected or you haven't seen like you would have in the past. Again, it's not like they get up 28-14 and all of a sudden the teams can no longer run the ball. They become one-dimensional, and that's when the guys up front can just go eat and pressure the quarterback every single play.
Phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We go there now. And Andy, you're on the line. How are you on this Thursday afternoon?
Hey, great. War Eagle. Hey, listen, I was right about the timing of Gus. I was right about COVID. I was right about Bitcoin. I'm batting 1,000 here. Listen, hear me out. This is what's going to happen. I heard you talking earlier. You did great on Max.
On Doug's show, yeah.
And I liked everything you're saying, but he said something really good, and it's common sense. We all know it, but Auburn's better than it was 2 years ago. Georgia's worse. So if we lose this game, that's going to be like my Oklahoma last year. That's going to be my final straw with threes. However, we can't go fire. Just because your new car is giving you some issues, you don't go and buy a new car. Mm-hmm. It's just humans can't do it, you know. Can't just keep running up your credit card debt because you have to pay it off sometime. So we're just going to have to be miserable for a year or two, or maybe have some pleasant surprises in there. Save up, get a good coach. We can't keep doing what we're doing. We can't just keep trading off coaches, losing these players, or we're just going to be in this stumble and we're going to be the Arkansas. We're going to be, you know, I can't even say Mississippi State anymore because they're doing good. But we got to stop this. We got to break the chain. We just got to suck it up for a year or two, like I said with Gus. You know, fire him, but just let's wait till Bo graduates. Those are my thoughts. We can't lose this game, but if we do, we can't go firing. We just got to just be miserable together. Misery loves company. Oregon.
Got you. Andy, appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. And I want to lean into that for a second, because let's take that mentality for a second, right? If you are John Cohen or the board or just anybody with a say-so, right, around this Auburn football program, if that's the mentality, right, where you can't lose this game, this is a big one, Hugh, you can't lose it, we got to have it, but if you do, we're not going to do anything, right? And not picking on Andy here, we're taking that mindset. My concern with that is, then where's the motivation come from, right? Where's the fire, where's the passion within the head man himself, which is something you and I have questioned in the past, right? So I'm not saying, and we've avoided this narrative for the most part, that his job is on the line for this game or up for grabs. I'm not willing to go there yet, but there has to be some sort of pressure in his side. There has to be someone looking over his shoulder, and I'm being told that they will be, to where this could be the litmus test, the last straw type of thing, to where if it doesn't improve or look better or have any sort of positivity for the future, then you start to at least have conversations, start to look around, start to bring some people together and figure out what your options are.
Yeah, you feel like right now the football program is the boat in the story of trying to go across muddy waters and tough waters, and the fan base is on either side, right? Trying to do their best to keep it afloat, and that's where you feel like everybody's kind of at right now. The boat's definitely not smooth sailing, but everybody's kind of still either right in the middle of the boat, keeping it afloat, or they're on either side, and that's where everybody is at right now. But this game is really one that draws the line of where the fan base can really, really begin to flip. Again, if you lose three straight, you fall to 3-3, very, very different than 4-2, when everybody goes back to their seat and they're very happy. Then all of a sudden Missouri, and then, you know, on the horizon 5-2 is possibly there. Imagine how different conversations could be here in a couple of weeks if you get back-to-back ranked wins, and all of a sudden you're 5-2, you're back to 2-2 in SEC play, and although it's still very frustrating, you're able to go look at those two road games of, dang it, look at what we weren't able to do, but look at what the bye week did, look at the change that did truly happen when they said it was going to, and now you feel like the defense is bringing energy to the offense, the offense is helping out the defense, which you feel like is still waiting for it to happen. But this game could go one of two very, very different ways. And, yeah, that litmus test is really, really going to be put to the test here on Saturday.
I mean, there just has to be some sort of urgency, right? Some sort of pressure, some sort of stress on this game. And I'm not saying to the point where a coach is miserable or always looking over his shoulder, right? We talk about that with quarterbacks a lot, and have here at Auburn in particular. But there has to be repercussions for lack of good performance, right? You can't bring home that C on the midterm and then come home at the end of the semester and still have a C and expect it to be okay. Expect your mom not to take your TV privileges or ice cream or whatever the cakes may be. For me, it was a lot more than that.
And to not use the excuse of, well, everybody else got a C too.
Yeah, no, that did not fly in my house, buddy.
No, exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what I'm saying. But
right.
It can't be the, well, everybody in the SEC is 8-4 or 7-5 this year.
Yeah, I mean, but my friend, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right? You've had your chances. You've had your opportunities. There has to be something to where I hate saying there needs to be a punishment. I'm not saying that, but there has to be repercussions here. There has to be a standard that's upheld. Listen to this text we just got and are on the line. Text box 334-784-1067. Someone says there is no pressure when a buyout is on the table. The whole system is broken. And I think that's a really fair point. That's a fascinating subject to dive into for a second. The fact that coaches may or may not feel pressure or as much pressure, knowing that, well, I mean, I want to win and I want to do good at this job and make this school better and bring them back to the glory days. But
if I don't.
But if it doesn't work out, or if I can't get it to work, or if something bad happens, at least I'm going to get paid. And you may not think that. Somebody like Hugh Freeze or another coach around college football, I want to believe they don't wake up and tell themselves that every day.
No.
They don't look in the mirror and say, I'm going to give it my all, but, you know, I got to buy out.
I have that fail safe. I have that security blanket.
That's not in the front of your brain, Christian, but it's in the back of your brain.
Yes.
And that's a fascinating point.
It really, really is. And shout out to a couple of the gentlemen that I was able to have conversations with a couple nights ago at dinner, actually. And they were bringing up some ideas, and I was just sitting there listening to them. And they mentioned the possibility of head coaches just getting almost base salary expectations. And then you have crazy, what's the word for it, when you're able to hit certain goals?
Incentives,
yes. Where all of a sudden an 8-game or 8-win season is this incentive, a 9-win game or 9-game season or 9-game win. Wow. 10 wins, all of a sudden you get to the SEC championship, you make it to the playoffs, that comes yearly, so that way this buyout thing does not become some legitimate conversation of, yeah, well, I know that worst case scenario, I have $19 million, or I have $40 million, or James Franklin that has $85 million, or Kirby Smart that has $104 million in my back pocket in case things go wrong. You're almost paid that year to year, that base salary with those incentives, because just saying it like it is, a bunch of these coaches, unfortunately, Auburn's program, I think, is still at that point where Auburn's not used as a leapfrog job, right? You don't go coach some G5 school and then go to Auburn and then go, okay, but what can I do after that? I still need to go and show out and do my best. That way I can still prove to myself and prove to everybody that I'm a really, really good football coach, either a coordinator or a head coach, just so that way in a couple years, X school comes calling and I can make that jump.
Mm-hmm.
Auburn's in that conversation of one of the 20 schools that nobody takes expecting to make a leapfrog jump over the next couple of years. And that's where that fail-safe comes through, of not saying that Hugh Freeze is at this point, but you go and you look at some of the best G5 head coaches in the country, or you go look at some of the best defensive coordinators or offensive coordinators that are thrown into the legitimate conversation of being new head coaches every single year. Those are the guys that wake up and feel the need to prove themselves to the school that they're at and to the rest of college football that they're ready to make that jump. You don't want to say this, but again, if you're a head coach at one of these programs, you know that there's nowhere else to go. Which brings you right back to that failsafe of a buyout, if that is a legitimate conversation.
I mean, 95% of jobs in this world don't have a buyout clause in it. I mean, I don't have a buyout. If I were to get fired tomorrow, the company doesn't owe me X amount of dollars.
Oh, I mean, yeah, a failed head coach is the best job in the world.
Yeah, being fired and being told to kick rocks is the best profession you can have. That's right in front of being a backup kicker, man.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's as good as it gets, right? And it's going, I don't know how we got to this point. I don't know how it got so out of control. Folks, do you realize there are coaches right now, James Franklin being the perfect example, that if they were to be fired right now, James Franklin would be owed over $50 million from Penn State. There's a reason he hasn't been let go, and he probably won't be this season unless they just lose
out. Or the next, or the next, or the next, or the next.
I mean, they're playing the time game, and his agent, James Franklin's agent is a genius and just worked over Penn State, because now they're stuck. Now they're screwed, right? Someone texted in a little bit ago talking about Hugh Freeze, and we'll get to that in a second. You think that's bad? You think $50 million as a buyout is insane? Folks, if Georgia woke up tomorrow and decided Kirby Smart wasn't the answer, they owe him over $100 million. Now, they're not going to do that. It would be idiotic to do so. But if, whatever reason, his buyout is $100 million for him to walk away and not coach again, Do we understand how idiotic that is? Credit to the agents who started this process however many years ago and have found a way to weasel this into contracts, but the only way that it's going to go away is for a big-time athletic director and a college football program who has a coach basically in their office and the contract in front of them and is willing to say no to a buyout clause like this. It's going to take somebody stepping up and having the stones to say, no, we're not doing that. Because that doesn't benefit the university. That doesn't benefit the program. That doesn't benefit the athletics department. I know you're covering your own rear end, and that's fine, but we're going to have to find a middle ground here. It's going to take somebody doing that on the verge and on the possibility of losing out on a big-name coach, but possibly resetting the standard across college athletics, because $100 million buyout is just absolutely absurd to me. I can't wrap my head around that idea, which it won't happen, but if it did, that's where it stands. This texter says that they were reminded yesterday that Hugh Freeze, if you are unhappy with him, his pay isn't all that crazy compared to those around the country or even those in the SEC. We'll tell you where he's at in the SEC coaching paying hierarchy when we come back, plus talk some more about this and what the Georgia game could be. We're off and running here on the Thursday edition of On the Line, and we continue after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we take our bottom of the hour break. We'll have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network joining us after that. We'll talk Auburn, Georgia, talk the bye week a little bit, talk a little basketball as well, and all the latest updates around Auburn athletics. But we're on this buyout conversation, which seems to come up right around this year, where some teams are good, some teams are not, and some teams are still trying to figure it all out. Or
have already made decisions.
Yeah, some have already done that. And it comes from this idea, right, that we were talking about Auburn and Georgia and what the stakes are for Hugh Freeze, for this Auburn football program with the game on Saturday. And someone texted in and said that there is no pressure in big games like this because buyouts exist. And it kind of got us thinking a little bit and going down this rabbit hole where someone texted in and said, I was just reminded yesterday that Hugh Freeze, in terms of his contract, it's not as bad as you think it is. Do you know where he ranks in the SEC in total payment per year, and his yearly salary as an SEC head football coach out of the 16 dudes who were the head man at a football program in the Southeastern Conference? Hugh Freeze ranks 14th out of 16th.
So now technically 13th of 15th, because Pittman was right behind him.
Yes. Who was making more money than Pittman, or who was making more money than Freeze was.
Yeah, by almost 100,000.
Mm-hmm. The only two coaches in the SEC right now that Hugh Freeze is making more year over year is Jeff Lebby and Clark Lee. He's making almost double what Clark Lee is. Think about that for a second. And that's not a shot at Hugh Freeze. That's disrespect for Clark Lee at this point. The fact that he's making 3.7, which is still nice, but he's got Vanderbilt winning games.
He's only making that?
Yeah, but he's winning games, right? So you start looking at these different coaches and their yearly salaries and their buyouts, right? Kirby Smart at the top making over $13 million a year in the SEC. It really is something that has gotten out of hand and gotten out of control, because On3 put out that article yesterday about the biggest buyouts in college football. We were talking about that a moment ago. Kirby Smart, $105 million. Ryan Day, $71 million. Kalen DeBoer, $61 million. Steve Sarkisian, $60 million. It's like, man, how did we get so far away from the organizations getting the short end of the stick? Because it's not just in college sports. You and I were just talking. This happens in professional sports every day.
Yeah, with the guaranteed contracts, right, you're seeing $440 million over 10 years, but $270 of that is guaranteed, to where if I get my pinky toe infected and have to never be able to play football again because of it, you can go ahead and just put that in my direct deposit.
Which I totally understand. From a player perspective, from his agent, from his family, I get protecting yourself in a situation like that. But it just it baffles me that we have gotten so far to babying the individual to where it hurts the organization, whether it's a college football program or an athletic department or an NFL team or an NBA team or whatever the case may be, right? And I was trying to figure out, man, where was the jump? Where did we go from a $5 to $6 million buyout to all these crazy $50, $70, $100 million buyouts? Because here's some examples over the last couple of seasons, right? Tom Herman was fired from FAU for $4 million buyout. Zach Arnett was fired from Mississippi State back in 2023 for a $4.5 million buyout. Heck, Tom Allen was fired from Indiana for a $15.5 million buyout from the Indiana University. But that's not the one that did it. I figured it out. I remembered where we took the major jump. Do you know what example I'm about to bring up? It's when Jimbo Fisher got fired at Texas A&M in 2023. Do you remember how much that money was? How much that buyout was?
North of 70.
$76 million to tell Jimbo Fisher to walk out the door.
When just 2 years before that, the highest buyout was Dabo Swinney in his prime at 40. That's where that jump started.
That's where it started. Because Texas A&M bit the bullet and wanted him gone so bad, they paid Jimbo $76 million.
And every other coach said, you know, or every other team said, huh, we want our guy gone too. And they said, well, you know what, he was just paid.
And every agent in America said, cha-ching.
Sign me up.
Sign me up. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network joins us after this to preview Auburn and Georgia.
Dixie Electric Plumbing and Air is excited to participate in our annual Catch Me in Pink campaign, raising money for cutting-edge breast cancer research. We partnered locally with the Joy to Life Foundation and Vera Bradley to help raise significant funds in support of the cause. Each week, we are giving away prizes locally in addition to our national grand prize, a tropical trip for two. To enter, simply snap an Aussie of you and a pink-clad Dixie employee and enter it on our website. Dixie will donate money for every photo that's submitted, and you will be entered to win big.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And we get to welcome in our man who joins us every Thursday at 2:30 from the Auburn Sports Network. You'll hear him on the coverage this weekend, the host of the Tiger Tailgate Show. It's Brad Law with us now. My man, it's good to have you back on the show, and hope you enjoyed the bye week last week, friend.
We did. War Eagle Jacob, good to talk to you guys again. How we doing? How we feeling? Are we pumped up for Saturday?
Yeah, we're excited. We're ready for it. We're getting ready for high school tomorrow, and then we'll have a big day on Saturday over at Jordan-Hare, and I'm sure you guys are getting ready too.
We are. I'll just say I've had about enough of this losing to Georgia stuff and this questions about the offense stuff and this being on the road stuff. I think enough is enough of all of that. And you kind of have the perfect storm for Auburn in this game Saturday. And so we're geared up and ready to go. And, you know, when you prepare for road games, you kind of have to have everything ready by the end of the day Thursday. So I'm used to kind of having everything done by the time I talk to you guys on Thursday. It's going to be a little, I don't like having an extra day in between. I just soon play the game tomorrow.
I mean, I'm sure you could talk to somebody and see if they'd move things around for you. I don't think it'd be that difficult just to move the game up an entire day.
Sure.
Well, no, you know, moving games, whether it's game times or locations, that's really not a big deal, and it's never met with any opposition whatsoever, so I'm sure it'd be fine.
Yeah, I'm sure there would be no pushback at all whatsoever. No. And so
Never will be.
Well, Auburn is coming off a bye week right after the two losses on the road at the SEC openers, and it feel like the bye week kind of went by fast, did it not? And now here we are again and preparing for another big-time SEC game, and if there's one or two things you're looking for in particular, Brad, for this Auburn team to have fixed during the bye week, no matter what it is, what are you looking for Saturday?
Well, it's a commitment to the running game, and that starts with it starts with the play calls. Also starts with the offensive line. The offensive line was kind of called out by the head coach and their position coach and fans and everybody else, and I think it's natural to want to respond to that if you've been called out. And so I think the offense worked maybe a day or two extra during the week than what Coach Freeze has typically done during the bye weeks with the practice schedule. I think there was a lot of intense focus and scrutiny on the offensive line. And so if they don't come out and perform very well in this game, I frankly will be a little bit surprised. And so if they do that, if they come out and they play well and they establish the line of scrimmage against a very good Georgia defense, and the defense that's only given up, you know, 16.5 points a game and 82 yards a game on the ground, it's a tough team to run against. But if Auburn wants to win this game and score more than the 11.25 points they've averaged per game against Georgia in the last eight meetings, it's going to have to be that offensive line kind of saying, look, this storyline is over. This period of not being the group that we think we are is over. And they've got to set the tone Saturday.
Brad, none of us wish that we were in Hugh Freeze's position from the standpoint of having to handle changes during the bye week and being scrutinized about not running the football as much as you should or think that you should. Yet when you look at this Georgia defense, they rank 86th in pass defense. They're 71st in third down defense. And so where is that line to be drawn where, yes, you want to establish the football. Yes, you still want to throw the football as well, but you also don't want to get back to the point where you feel like you're one-dimensional, having to put the ball in the air every single play?
Very few offenses success in the SEC, in the history of the SEC, ever have passed to set up the run, like, consistently and won at a championship level. So it's difficult to do, but you got to be able to do difficult things in this league. You're going to have to be able to run the ball effectively. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if early in the game Georgia keeps their safeties back. You know, so much of this offense is predicated on what the defense does, but there are times when it's not determined by the defense. There are times you just got to go, no, we're a running team. We're going to run the ball. We're going to move it. And I think early in the game you're going to have a chance to do that because I think Georgia will start the safeties back. And as you run effectively, now those safeties have to come up and help, and now you get one-on-one matchups on the outside with your receivers. And then it's up to Jackson to make those quick decisions and make the accurate throws. He's done the latter. He hasn't done so much the former. But it starts not with passing, but it starts with running the ball effectively.
We've got Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network with us here on ESPN 106.7. And you mentioned coming on here the idea that you're tired of losing to Georgia. And I think most Auburn fans share that feeling with you. We know the numbers, right? It's been eight games in a row that Auburn has lost to Georgia. You've only beaten them three times since 2006. I mean, what does it take to overcome that? Because it feels like it's more than just one 60-minute game. It feels like a burden that you just can't get out of, right, Brad? So what does it take to get over that and start to get some of those wins back for Auburn?
I'm not doing this to pick at you, but you just set it up so perfectly. It is to try not to make it eight games worth of payback.
Sure.
It's to try to make it about one game. It's to try to make it about this game, every one-on-one matchup on the field. Georgia's multiple offensively. They use the width of the field as well as the length of the field. DJ Durkin and Mike Bobo have gone against each other a bunch at their two various stops in the SEC. And so they kind of have a feel for what the other one wants to do. At the end of the day, to do it, you're going to have to score points. Auburn is averaging averaging, allowing opponents to score about 11 or 12 points under their season average so far this year. So that would mean Georgia's at about 34.5 points a game. That would mean Georgia would get about 22, if you go pure math, okay? Pure math formula, 22. Auburn has averaged, in the last eight meetings, 11.25 points a game against Georgia. You have to double that. Only once in those last eight games have they reached 20 points, period, like 20. In the three wins since 2005, they've scored 40 or more. So scoring 20 probably isn't enough. You got to find a way to get into the end zone three-plus times, and that's how you break the streak. That's how you get the win. That's how you win this game against Georgia, is get into the end zone three-plus times and then defensively continue to bend but don't break. You're going to give up yards. You're going to give up first downs. You got to give up 21 first down, three field goals, instead of like 28 first downs and three touchdowns.
We're talking about what Auburn needs to do against Georgia's defense, and you began talking about what Georgia's offense can do, or what Auburn's defense should not allow Georgia's offense to do. They rank 35th offensively in rushing offense. They're 30th in third down offense, and have a couple new offensive toys that they love being able to go to, especially out wide. Zachariah Branch and Colby Young in that wide receiver room. You're seeing Chauncey Bowens and obviously Nate Frazier in the running back room as well, and you pair that with Peyton Woodring, one of the best kickers in all of college football. Where do you expect Auburn to try and find success defensively against this Georgia offense?
It better be to stop the run. Again, it's not easy, but it is pretty simple. The formula has been the same for 50, 60 years plus in the Southeastern Conference, even with the up-tempo offenses. And, you know, even Joe Burrow's year at LSU, when teams dropped 8 and 9 and they had to run the ball, they did. You must run the ball to have success. And DJ Durkin's group must stop the Georgia running attack. Their two primary running backs are averaging 5 yards a carry. They don't give it to anybody 25 times a game. Those two receivers that you just mentioned, they have 18 catches. They're averaging 3 catches plus per game. It's not, you know, they don't have top 10 in any statistical category individually. They just spread it around. They just kind of, they get on the assembly line and they do their work. They do their job effectively. They have injuries along the offensive line. Now, they're five-star freshmen filling in, but they're still freshmen, or they're backups, but they're five-star backups. They have established an identity over the last decade that they're kind of an assembly line program. They plug guys in. They do their job. For Auburn to have success defensively, they've got to try to take advantage of a patchwork offensive line, talented though it may be, and stop those running backs and Gunnar Stockton from averaging 5 yards a carry. If you can hold them to 3, 3.5, it's going to be a good day defensively.
Auburn fans are hoping for a good game in the 60 minutes. It'll be played inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium. But, Brad, leading up to it with you guys on the Tiger Tailgate Show and then the moments before kickoff inside the stadium, it's going to be a special moment when Cam Newton has his name and number retired at Auburn. Just kind of put into words, in your own words, and I know you'll do a great job with this on the broadcast, but what that will mean for Auburn fans and leading up to this game and kind of the extra juice that it'll give for what could be a really fun football game on Saturday night.
Yeah, tough not to over-dramatize when you talk about Cam Newton. He's the greatest quarterback in college football history, and I don't care that he only played here 1 year. He's the greatest quarterback in college football history, and he only needed 1 year to prove it. And the impact that he made on the Auburn program, you know, when you added him to this dynamic group of upperclassmen on the offensive and defensive lines, and a Lombardi winner, and, you know, talented linebackers who played in the NFL and capable secondary guys. I mean, you had so much experience coming back, and then you add that secret weapon. You add the best quarterback in college football history, and you break that long drought without an official, you know, national championship game win. And you give fans memories that they will hold on to forever and ever. And so you get to relive those a little bit. And celebrate Cam Newton and his jersey retirement. He's been unofficially retired for 14 years, and good to make it official Saturday night. Cam Newton, by the way, will be a guest on the Tiger Tailgate Show Saturday afternoon.
All right.
So if you are anywhere near our stage on the east side of Jordan-Hare Stadium, make sure that you're there early, and you're not going to want to miss the 9 or 10 minutes or so that we have Superman on stage.
Well, Brad, taking the trip down memory lane, I know that us talking about the frustrations and wanting to get over the hump, maybe more of the past and more of recent times, but taking away the prayer at Jordan-Hare and taking away the screen pass to Kerryon Johnson, favorite Auburn Georgia moment from yourself?
Does it have to be a play in the game?
Not necessarily.
Okay, so 2017, after that game, which was like a 40-17 game that was nowhere near, you know, that close. That's the game where the Auburn crew played Soldier Boy, which was fantastic.
Yes.
Just a callback to 10 years earlier in Athens. Ronnie Brown was in his second year as our sideline reporter. And this is when our booth was still, at, you know, along the sideline rather than in the corner. And he came down the steps into the booth to do post game, and he came down the steps dancing. And to turn around and look at Ronnie, like the euphoria, the dopamine levels couldn't have been any higher at that moment than to watch the number 2 overall draft pick in the 2005 draft dancing down the steps ready to do post game after you'd just beaten the ever-loving devil out of Georgia. So
that's
that's a great moment.
That's a fantastic memory. And Auburn hoping for some more like that this Saturday when they host Georgia under the lights in Jordan-Hare for the Deep South's oldest rivalry. Brad Law with the Auburn Sports Network is with us on the phone lines. Plug it all, my friend. Tell people what they need to know. You just gave them a little tease of it there with Cam Newton going to be on the set there for a moment. But tell everybody what they need to know for this Saturday's broadcast.
All right, 3:30 is when the Tiger Tailgate Show kicks off on Wings 94.3. Of course, you guys will have them set for a couple hours even before that.
Mm-hmm.
And folks can call in and be a part of the show and give their predictions there. And then we officially take over on the network at 3:30. Can I run the guest list?
Absolutely.
Okay. Hope I don't leave anybody out because this is a pretty full guest list. Cam Newton. Harry Bowden is back for his first game since he was the head coach. He's officially retired now.
Wow.
He will be on the stage with us. Ben Leard, who flat out owned Georgia during his time as a player, he will be with us on the stage. Stephen Pearl, in his first interview on the show as officially the head men's basketball coach. Chris Malvo is going to be our guest picker for our game picks. And Travis Williams is back. The second hour of that Tiger Tailgate Show from 4:30 to 5:30 has three different national champions represented with Cam Newton, Terry Bowden, and T-Will. It is a jam-packed show, and we will get it all started for you at 3:30 Saturday.
Wow. How about the star studs that are going to be on the stage next to the biggest star of them all, Brad Law, hosting the Tiger Tailgate Show over on Wings 94.3. Looking forward to that, Brad. We always appreciate your time, my friend, with us each and every Thursday. Enjoy this Saturday. I know you guys are going to do a fantastic job.
I appreciate it, Jacob. Hope you all have a great day. War Eagle.
War Eagle. That's Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network with us every Thursday, 2:30, right here on ESPN 106.7. Talk about a loaded lineup, man. That is incredible. That's incredible.
It almost matches up with our Thursday guest list.
Almost. It's close. It's close. I mean, they say Chris Gordy is the Cam Newton of the podcasting
world. That is what I've heard. It's kind of, but I've heard that Brad is really the one that elevates everybody, though.
Yeah, he's the Terry Bowden of hosting.
Correct.
I agree with that.
And really helps the show here on Thursdays.
Yeah.
I mean,
no, we love it. We love it. We appreciate him. And that is going to be awesome. So, yeah, Saturday is going to be loaded down next door on Wings 94.3. You heard him mention it. Game Day on Wings is our pregame show that we have over there 2 hours before they take over. 5 hours before kickoff, Game Day on Wings. Uncle T-Bone will be there. No jumping Jack Hutton, though. Your own Christian Griffin is going to be pinch-hitting, filling in for Jack on Saturday.
So you want to know why the guest list is as high as it is. It's because they're trying to top the guest that's coming on Game Day on Wings.
Yeah, so you and T-Bone will have it from 1:30 to 3:30, and then Brad and the guys will take over 3:30 to 6:30 and then kick off between Auburn, Georgia. All of that on Wings 94.3. Let's take our final break, come back, wrap up hour number one, and we'll get into hour number two here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to Brad Law joining us on the phone lines from the Auburn Sports Network. And, again, they'll have a jam-packed Tiger tailgate show for you on Saturday, including Cam Newton, who is getting his jersey officially retired at Jordan-Hare this Saturday. And I know fans are going to be really excited for that and pumped up to be in the stadium for that and to see the festivities there and then eventually obviously see the game itself. But Auburn did announce that it's going to be all Auburn, all orange is what fans are supposed to wear this season, because, you know, fans love when they're told what to wear. So,
yeah.
I think most of them were fine two or three times a year. But when they were doing it for every single home game, that's when fans were like, yeah, it's a little much.
I remember to start the year for the Ball State game, it literally was like, wear your choice. And Everybody was like, woo! Thank you so much.
Seems like they've gotten away from doing it every game. I think they heard.
The noise. Indefinitely, but it usually is you wear all orange against Georgia and you wear navy against Alabama. I feel like at least that's what I remembered. Just so that way the orange looks like the red, or the red looks like the orange rather, throughout the entire stadium. And then when Alabama, it's the orange and blue when the screen or when the cameras are really high. But yeah. Not too many complaints, other than the fact of everybody saying, well, I was going to wear my Cam Newton jersey, so now I got to dye it orange to try and be able to wear it. But no, it's, again, I've always known as playing Georgia as being all Auburn, all orange, and a really cool place to go if you want to look and try and find something for yourself. Have you shopped at Rally House in Tigertown yet? If not, again, you have to go check them out right now. They're new to town this summer. Rally House has the most outrageous selection of Auburn Tigers gear that you will find. And this weekend, Image One and Rally House are partnering to bring a Rally With Us event to Rally House Tigertown Friday and Saturday. On Friday from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., the party will be at Rally House in Tigertown. You can get yourself a free koozie or a sticker with the purchase of any Image One merchandise while supplies last, of course. But located in the Tigertown Shopping Center next to World Market, you shop Rally House Tigertown for the best selection of gear that you've seen yet. And my goodness, we went in there a week or two after they opened.
Oh yeah, place is awesome, man.
Didn't know what to expect, but you knew the building that was there prior, and you walk in and it feels like it just keeps on going.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that used to be the old Party City, and Now that it's the Rally House, and yeah, I mean, you've got all the clothing on the right, you've got the accessory stuff in the middle, you've got the nice sweatshirts and the hoodies and things, and so yeah, go check them out this weekend. The Rally With Us event, Friday 1 to 7 p.m. and then Saturday 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Image One and Rally House this weekend out there in Tigertown. So go check that out if you need to pick up a last minute shirt or a hat or whatever the case may be. Go check them out this weekend at Rally House over there in Tigertown.
And they're definitely not short, again, of all of their sorts of stuff. Your Nike, the Image One, everything that they have. My wallet hurt when I walked out when my first time I was in there.
Yep, so go check them out. We appreciate them being with us, and you can go make yourself a purchase, get a free koozie or a sticker if you buy an Image One item out at Rally House this weekend. Hour number one is in the books. Stick around. We got a loaded hour number two coming up. Auburn High's head football coach Keith Etheridge will join me live at 3 o'clock on the phone lines. We'll talk about the loss to Central last week and how they can bounce back against Smith Station tomorrow. Plus, Chris Gordy, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast, joins us coming up at 3:30 as well. All that coming up in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this Thursday afternoon as we get started in the second hour of today's program. If you missed any of the first hour, you'll be able to go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. Check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com. Talked more about the Georgia Bulldogs. Dove into some more of the numbers there for the Dogs and Kirby Smart coming to Jordan-Hare on Saturday. Also got into an interesting buyout conversation just across college football and a problem that we have in the world of sports right now. And then we talked to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network about Auburn, Georgia, Cam Newton getting his number retired, and a whole lot more. So that was all in hour number one. If you missed it, check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com. And we continue a guest-heavy show on Thursday afternoons during the football season because my man, Coach Etheridge, Keith Etheridge of Auburn High School Football, he joins us on the phone lines to get us started in hour number two. What's going on, Coach? How are you on this Thursday afternoon?
What's up, Jake? Jake, doing good, man.
Yes,
doing
sir. Yes, sir. Well, we're excited to get back on the field tomorrow night as you and your squad make a quick trip up to Smith Station, taking on the Panthers tomorrow night on the road, and we'll get to that as we go. But last week was a big one. It was Central at home, and things just didn't go our way in that game, Coach, and for several different reasons. And I want to give you a chance to kind of tell what you saw and kind of what you can grow from out of that loss to Central last week.
Yeah, we did some good things, but we, like I said, we turned the ball over. We had some penalties. You know, you gotta play really clean football if you're gonna have opportunities. And the games get Central. They're super athletic. They do a great job, and they got a really good football team. So if you're gonna play in big games like that, you gotta make sure you do the little things right. And we had some turnovers, and that led to points for them. You know, I think 21 to be exact. Mm-hmm. So. You can't do that against really good football teams, but we learned some things. I think we're getting better in some places. I thought defensively we played really good. You know, we put our defense in a tough spot a couple times with some turnovers. Probably should have been about 3-0 at halftime. You know, and you know, just some penalties here or there. You know, would have made the game a lot closer.
Right, and yeah, those three turnovers for your Tigers led to three touchdowns, which it's just hard to overcome that, right, at this level and against a team coached so well by Coach Nix and things. And for the offensive side of the football, Coach, are you seeing the progression that you want to, right? You and I talked way back in the beginning that your team was going to get better every single week. Are you seeing that progression from your quarterback, Kaysen Myers, and the guys around him as we enter the backstretch of the season?
Yeah, I think Kaysen is progressing great. You know, I think that we dropped some balls the other night that usually we catch. I don't know if it was, you know, nerves. I don't know. But, you know, we should be past that point, you know, right now.
Sure.
And our guys know that, you know. We got to put our guys in good situations. And I think that, I think we are getting better, you know. But we gotta still do the little things right. Another night, you know. It was just some little things we didn't do great, you know. I thought that we, like I said, I thought we played great on defense. I thought we dropped some balls on offense, missed a couple blocks. You know, we had some big plays that got called back by, you know, some penalties.
And some that didn't.
Yeah, and some that didn't. That's right. But, you know, we just got to continue to get better. And we can't, you know, that game's over with. We can't focus on it. We got to learn from it and move on to the next one. We got Smith Station team coming in that's coming off of their first region win in a long time, so they're feeling really good. And, you know, we got to be ready to play because they're playing pretty good football right now.
The Auburn High Tigers 5-2 overall this season, 3-1 in 7A Region 2 play last week, of course, being the first loss in region play. And we are going to talk about that Smith Station team. But as we come down the home stretch, right, just three games remaining in the regular season, yeah. Coach, which is crazy to think about. This region is still up for grabs in terms of who could win it, who could get the two yeah. seed, who could be 3-4, whether you host or travel. I mean, there's still a lot to be decided in this region.
Bunch to be excited, you know. It's just you got so many good teams in this region, you know. We've won some games that we needed to win too. We got some under our belt. We got some tough teams left. All three games left are region games, you know. You take the team we played at the first year. You take Booker. They're sitting there. They're like 7-1 right yeah. now, and they're playing really good down there in Florida. So. You know, we played a really good team out of region. Vestavia's doing well up there in the region up there, region 3. And then Moody. You know, I think they're one of the favorites in 5A. You know, so our out of region games are tough. And, you know, I think that helps you when you start playing region games because you know you got some experience against different kind of teams, and you know I think that. We're fixing to see three really different types of teams in this these last three games.
We're talking with Auburn High's head football coach Keith Etheridge during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. You look at Region 2 standings and 7A football right now. Carver 4-0, Central 4-0. Those two teams go at it this Friday night. So that's going to be a really, really fun game for those two teams. Your Tigers there at 3-1. Opelika is also at 3-1 as well. Tigers play Smith Station tomorrow, then host Carver, then go to Dothan. So it's going to get fascinating down the street. But you do go to Smith Station tomorrow for the first time on the road in over a month, Coach. I know that could be difficult at times, but you told me no real concerns for your guys, maybe even excited a little bit to get on the road tomorrow.
Yeah, sometimes it's good to play in a different atmosphere, you know, to get a road game and be at a different place and sort of revives you a little bit, you know. Hopefully we get that feeling because it's not far down the road, you know. All these kids know the kids at Smith Station, so, you know, it's a game where, you know, kids are going to be familiar with each other. They're going to know each other. And, you know, I think it's going to make kids play hard.
Well, what is it about the Smith Station team who you mentioned coming off their first region win of the year, taking down Jack last week, looking to build some momentum at home in front of their own fans? What sticks out to you guys offensively, defensively on film about what the Panthers do and what they might try to do tomorrow night?
Yeah, they got some good running backs. 27-24-2. Got a big tight end, 8, you know, 13. Their quarterback playing really good right now. So, you know, they've got some offensive weapons. You know, they do a really good job offensively, and coaches really come in there and give them a good shot in the arm, and you know, and they believe in what they're doing right now, and it shows on film. You know, they're playing a lot better. And, you know, we got to go in ready to play.
We'll have the full radio broadcast for you tomorrow. Auburn and Smith Station will have it on Wings 94.3. That's the home of the Auburn High Sports Network. Pregame 6:30, kickoff at 7 between the Tigers and the Panthers. And if you get this one done, Coach, it sets up for no matter what happens tomorrow with Carver and Central. I mean, next week's game, not to look ahead too much, but next week's game sets up to be a potential hosting scenario for the postseason, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if we can get this win, you know, next week we'll decide home playoff. If we can get a win against Carver, we'll be home for sure in the first round. So definitely do not want to look past this week because you got to get it done this week and then start worrying about next week. So you know, I had somebody ask me, "Have you actually watched film on Carver and stuff?" I said, "No. I'm not looking past Smith Station. We're not going to look past anybody." And I told our kids that, you know, we got to take every game one at a time, and you know, just grind it out. You know, we're not trying to look past nobody. Smith State's got a good football team.
Nameless, faceless opponent, right, Coach?
That's right. That's exactly right, Jacob. You've heard me say it before.
That's right. It'll be Auburn and Smith Station tomorrow night on the road down there in Smith Station, about 45 minutes or so. So, again, if you can't get there, you can listen to us over on Wings 94.3. That's on the Auburn High Sports Network for the radio broadcast. Head Coach Keith Etheridge with me every Thursday, 3 o'clock, right here on ESPN 106.7. Coach, we always appreciate your time, my man. I'm so thankful for you and everything you've done for us and for me in particular. We're looking forward to another good one tomorrow night.
Thank you for what y'all do, Jacob, for the kids. And, you know, our kids love listening to y'all. They talk about it all the time. They go home and listen to the game after the game.
Love that. We love it. Well, we're proud to do it, and we're looking forward to it tomorrow night, Coach. Go get them, all right? Go Tigers.
Appreciate you, Jacob. Go Tigers. God bless.
That's head coach Keith Etheridge of Auburn High School Football with us every Thursday right here on ESPN 106.7. We'll take a break, come back, and start to preview a little bit the games around the SEC coming up this weekend in college football, because our guy Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC joins us at 3:30. We'll have a little appetizer for you when we come back here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here in the ESPN 106.7 studio. This is the Thursday edition of On the Line. Thanks to Auburn High's head football coach, Keith Etheridge, for joining me on the phone lines, as he does every Thursday. And if that's not enough, you can tune in with us tomorrow night on the Auburn High football broadcast. We'll have another sit-down with Coach Etheridge, pregame, halftime, and postgame. So we appreciate him and, all that he has done for Auburn High, for the Auburn High Sports Network, for me as well. And so I just wrapped up a conversation with him, and we got Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC coming up in about 15 minutes or so. We're going to talk to him about all the biggest games coming up this weekend in college football, one of those being Auburn and Georgia. And if you are going to be going to the Auburn game, the Tigers announced that it is an orange out, so you want to wear all Auburn, all orange this weekend if you're going to be tailgating or around Jordan-Hare. Maybe you just need a new piece of Auburn equipment or gear. I think they got some Brave stuff. Maybe it's discounted because of the postseason. I don't know. So don't take my word for that. But if you are looking for Auburn gear this weekend,
they have some shirts that say World Series 2025. Got them for a great deal.
Yeah, I was about to say, don't they actually ship those off somewhere? But if you are looking for some new Auburn gear for the weekend, Rally House Tiger Town is the place to be this weekend. All Tiger fans need to go check them out, because Rally House has the most outrageous selection of Auburn Tigers gear you will find. Rally House has brought Image One to town to create a Rally With Us event both Friday and Saturday. Image One merchandise is awesome. You just have to see it for yourself. The best part, this weekend from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Friday and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, any purchase of Image One merchandise at Rally House Tiger Town qualifies you to get a free koozie or sticker to make your game day style unique. So get out to Rally House in Tiger Town, the shopping center, this weekend for Image One's Rally With Us.
Again, used to be the Party City building, and they have Auburn gear for just about every possible Halloween costume that you could think of.
Yeah, I mean, any sort of merchandise you want. I mean, like varsity jackets, sweatshirts, t-shirts, golf polos,
dresses,
overalls.
Yeah, you
want to
dress up as
overalls.
A football player, baseball player.
They got it, man.
A golfer.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So go check it out. Rally House in Tigertown with the Rally With Us event, thanks to Image One and Rally House Tigertown. So we appreciate them being with us, and we want you to go and check it out Friday. Again, the hours Friday, tomorrow from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m., and then Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. So plenty of time to go get you an orange shirt if you don't have one for the football game on Saturday.
Yeah, and again, Jacob, you mentioned we have Chris Gordy joining us on the phone lines here in just a few minutes to break down some of the best games from this past weekend in the SEC and what is supposed to be and everything to set up to be a fantastic slate once again in the Southeastern Conference. Again, everybody knows we give our official game picks tomorrow on the Free For All Friday edition of On the Line, and we broke down a little bit of the Giants schedule for this weekend, because again, it is a really, really good slate of college football from 11 a.m. to 9:15 p.m. There are games that you feel like you could make time to go make sure that you're standing next to a TV, or at least check an update on your phone. But let's dive into some of these games while we have just a little bit. And it starts with arguably one of the most exciting games of the weekend. It's 11 o'clock. It's ABC in Como. There's a lot of people beginning to jump on the Missouri Tigers. We've heard a lot about what they're doing on the recruiting trail as well. It's one of the most anticipated games as a recruit that they will go to this weekend. You've heard a lot of the big names that are making their way up to Columbia, Missouri, as the 8th-ranked Alabama Crimson Tide come to town to take on Eli Drinkwitz and the Missouri Tigers.
Yeah, I mean, this game is one of the biggest we've seen so far in the SEC this year. And the fact that we get to start the day with it tomorrow, or on Saturday, rather, is awesome. I mean, this game should be fun, should be high-scoring. Two defenses that can get stops when they want to, but two offenses that could put up 35, 40 points pretty much at any time. And so Alabama slightly favored still. 2.5 is what I see so far for Alabama on the road in Como. So that gets the day started with a top 15 matchup in the SEC. I wish this game was better. I do. I wish that Washington State and Ole Miss was going to be better, but the fact that Ole Miss is favored by 31.5 points kind of tells you all you need to know about this one. So,
the line has dropped a point, though.
Yeah.
So now it's only 31.5 instead of 32. If you really choose, and that's the game that you're really, really desiring to go to, you can go for the price of two large pizzas. $30, depending on where you go to get those.
I was gonna say, depending on which pizza place you go to. But I wish that game was better.
I do as well.
It is what it is. So, Red River.
Imagine if John Mateer was still at Wazoo.
Oh my gosh!
What a game! That might have been the main reason.
Yeah.
Because again, the talent. I saw a video clip from a couple years ago, and it was Cam Ward and John Mateer lining up in the backfield at the same time. And they faked a jet sweep, and John Mateer was playing playing the running back spot. They faked a jet sweep to a receiver, and Mateer ran out in the flat, and Cam Ward threw it to him.
At Washington State. Yes.
And now, again, think about where those two guys are. You have the number one overall pick leading the Tennessee Titans to a come-from-behind victory. Was it over Arizona? I believe.
Sure.
I believe that's right. And then you have John Mateer, who is still up in the air for the Red River rivalry, but
word is he's going to play.
From Monday, where it was, it's not looking good. It looks like it's going to be number two or number three, and now all of a sudden it's, he wants to get out there, and so if everything looks good, we're going to give him the thumbs up.
Yeah, that's the next game on the slate Saturday. Number 6, Oklahoma taking on Texas. Reminder, that game in Dallas at the Cotton Bowl, where Texas 3-2 on the year, 0-1 in SEC play, still looking for their first P4 win on the year, and they're still favored to win. The line has dropped. It's nearly a pick'em now, but Texas still favored by 1.5. I refuse to believe that it's possible, but I also know that Vegas knows something that we don't. That's what this line screams to me, is they know something that we don't know. And I can't wait to hear what Chris Gordy has to say about it here in just a few minutes. But Red River going on 2:30 on Saturday. Same time, 3:15, Arkansas and Tennessee. Now, this one could be fun because of the points that could be scored. I'm not so sure about the defense on at least one side of things, but this is the first game for Arkansas to get on the field with a new head coach. Petrino's back. He cleaned house. Everybody's gone off the sidelines. Don't know exactly who's going to be coaching with him, but the rivalry or the what am I looking for? The enemy arc? That's not it. What do they call it in the movies? Like when the bad guy like rises up to finally
like arch nemesis? Are you talking about like the anti-hero?
Yeah. Isn't there like a term for it where like the bad guy's got this plan to like overcome and take over, and then they finally get like to the top? You know what I mean? I'm not crazy, right?
No.
All those film classes I took in college did me nothing. Regardless, Petrino has achieved what he wanted to achieve, which was get hired at Arkansas, watch it collapse on itself and now take over as the head man. Now, whether he's the full-time guy moving forward or not, we don't know. He's the interim right now. But Arkansas takes the field Saturday afternoon in Knox Vegas. Can they compete with Tennessee on Saturday? Again, not making official picks, but just talking generically. Can Arkansas compete with Tennessee on Saturday?
No.
No. Not even a bit. Not a chance. Not a sliver.
I don't think so. You have Talen Green, and if that's – I mean, that he's the one guy that can keep you in football games, but the one time that we saw that as a legitimate talking point, you saw how Notre Dame was able to silence everybody else around him and almost made it to where – almost made it like what you see in today's NBA of, all right, Kevin Durant, Anthony Edwards, they're going to get their 25, 30 points, but we're not going to let – Bradley Beal or Naz Reid or whoever go off for 20 around him to where that 25 feels like 45. It's, we'll let him get his own, but we're not letting anybody else do anything. You saw Talen Green make a couple mistakes, and, man, that game was over before it got started. In Knoxville with Joey Aguilar, I think this one could get ugly, but because I say that, I mean, watch this be a three-point game.
I mean, Tennessee only favored by 11.5 points here, so I just think the Arkansas potential offense could give them a shot, but Tennessee's defense could use this as a game to just really tee off. So then you flip to the night slate around the SEC.
You're not thinking protagonist, are you? I'm still looking. I'm still looking for your.
No, it's like a again. Any film people out there that. Can back
it's not
me
like
up
it,
on
it's
this.
Not like the noun is the person. It's like something that person does.
Yeah, it's like you reach like you're like you reach the not the pinnacle, but like it's and it's. I feel like it's particularly for the bad guy when they finally achieve their goal. And then in most movies, ultimately they fail or do something they're not supposed to, or then the good guy steps up and takes him down or whatever. But what is that when the bad guy in the movie gets to the top and achieves the goal that he or she wanted to achieve? What is that?
It's like it's not enemy the darkest hour.
No, it's like your because
that's usually when like the good guy's at the lowest.
Your evil like arc or your I don't know, man. Somebody's got to know what I'm talking about. I'm gonna find it. I'm not doing it right now, but I will find what I'm talking about. So,
Chris Gordy will know what you'll mean, and he'll use the word to somehow describe Auburn.
Speaking of enemy and bad guy taking over, Florida is in Texas A&M with Billy Napier, who saved his job last week, and Florida fans are thrilled by that. Coming off the win over Texas, Gators back out on the road. They are in College Station, where Texas A&M feels like they're playing their 18th game in a row at home. It's their third, by the way. This would be their fifth of the first six games this year are going to be in Kyle Field. Then they go to Arkansas. Woo. Florida is in College Station tomorrow night, where the Aggies only favored by about a touchdown or so. Can Florida double dip here and make this interesting with DJ Lagway?
Could you imagine if Florida rises to 3-3 after a win?
After all that.
After everything is said and done. Shout out Carl Anthony Towns. After all that.
With
Florida finds a way to get back to 500.
A game with Mississippi State next Saturday afternoon in the Swamp. All of a sudden they have a winning record before Georgia comes to town.
My goodness.
There ain't no way. Ain't no way. They still have Georgia. They have A&M this weekend. Mississippi State, who's not playing bad ball. Georgia, Kentucky, yes. But then don't forget, they go at Ole Miss, home for Tennessee, home for Florida State to end that regular season. So... yeah, the toughest schedule in the country is not doing so hot down there in Gainesville. Is there still a world where Billy gets fired this year? Hold on, I still have that article pulled up. What's his buyout? Can I get there?
While you're looking at it again, it's a game or it's a weekend of storylines. You mentioned it. Missouri at home for the sixth straight game before they finally hit the road next week to come to the Plains. Ole Miss trying to not allow any sort of upset. Texas is favored in the Red River rivalry, although Oklahoma's won five of the last seven at the Cotton Bowl. Petrino now in Arkansas. Napier trying to do something at Florida. Freeze trying to get over the hump against Georgia, and South Carolina begins their stretch of hell.
$19 million is the buyout for Billy Napier in Gainesville if they fire him at the end of the season. So, could be worse. if you're the Gators. So we'll talk about those games and more coming up next with Chris Gordy, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us here in Auburn and Opelika. And it's Thursday at 3:30, and we've been doing this for years, talking to this guy who is the host of the Locked On SEC podcast, talking all the biggest storylines around the Southeastern Conference. Chris Gordy joins us now on the phone lines. What's up, Chris? How are you on this Thursday?
What is going on, fellas? It's almost another weekend, man. We got a full slate of games this weekend.
Chris, I was trying to make guesses of who the guest picker was on your show last week. Who ended up being the guy?
So it was my buddy Jeff Blum, who I didn't realize was on vacation, and he kept like saying, "Can we record later? Can we record later?" And then like ultimately had to take a rain check, and then I found out after he was on vacation. I was like, well, I would have picked somebody else had I known that. But it's all good. We'll get him on in a future week. But, yeah, World Series champion.
Yeah, and why was the Astros color commentator on vacation this early? I mean, I thought that there's usually – I thought he's usually occupied.
Yeah, it's all good. I mean, the Yankees crew is going to come join him here starting today, and we'll see if hopefully the Mariners crew can join him this weekend.
Yeah, there's a lot happening on the postseason side. It's been awesome to watch baseball postseason so far. I mean, just some incredible performances and things like that. And so, Chris, we do want to talk a lot of football with you, of course, around the Southeastern Conference. And you mentioned another stacked slate this weekend, but do want to rewind here quickly to what happened a week ago. Wasn't the most juiced slate of all time, but Florida pulls off the upset against Texas. Bama overcomes their kryptonite of Vanderbilt, and I think those were the two biggest stories from a week ago.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I somebody asked, like, what's the biggest shocker so far of the season, and to me, it was what Florida did to Texas. You know, I noted it last week that Billy Napier, you know, was talking very confidently and said, you know, DJ Lagway just had his best week of practice. And I know a lot of times that's coach speak, but when you consider the kid was limited all throughout the spring with the shoulder injury and then, you know, had the boot on his foot at one point in the fall camp. I mean, Lagway hasn't been healthy. And if you watch that game, even after his first couple passes, he's like limping around. I mean, he still was not fully healthy. But what they did get was Dallas Wilson, their five-star freak receiver that was the star of their spring game. And when I kept hearing that he was going to make his debut, I was like, look, this is big. And I don't think enough people noted it. He had a Ryan Williams-level impact on that game. I mean, you know, over 100 yards, two touchdowns receiving. He was literally carrying Texas defenders, you know, pushing them to the ground, carrying them into the end zone. And so, look, if this is a sign of things to come for Florida, they're going to pull off a couple more big upsets if they're going to have a dude like this, combined with the run game of Jaden Baugh and what that offensive line was able to do. So very impressive, Florida. Look, the Swamp is a tough place to play. And Texas, they got eaten alive. That offensive line is not protecting very well for Arch Manning right now. And some of the decision-making and some of the throws from Arch Manning are just not there. And so to me, that was the biggest shocker of the weekend.
Is it time to have any sort of conversation about the Texas offense with Arch Manning, Chris? Or is it more of just, again, like what you were mentioning, going into the Swamp, it's tough to do, and the offensive line hasn't necessarily been helping. Obviously, the offensive struggles are much more than just that quarterback spot, but is it worth having any sort of conversation if things don't go well in Red River this weekend?
Well, I just don't know what those conversations would be. I mean, if the conversation is benching Arch Manning, you really don't have anything good behind him. I mean, Matthew Caldwell is a guy who was at Troy. I don't know if that's necessarily the guy to lead Texas. Now, if this were a year from now, they're bringing in Dia Bell, who is one of the top, you know, quarterback recruits in the country. He'll be on campus next year. So, you know, if it was that scenario, yeah, you could throw the five-star freshman out there and see what you have in him. But you're all in on Arch right now, and it's what I said before. Like, you're going to have to go through your growing pains of, you know, or Arch was going to go through his growing pains this year. I think he'll be much better next year. But, you know, it's just kind of going to be a roller coaster. Look, some of those throws he made on Saturday were really good.
Yeah.
And I appreciate he's the opposite of Jackson Arnold. He, you know, Jackson Arnold is being preached, don't throw it in the fire at all. Arch Manning is a gunslinger. He'll throw it into double coverage and get picked off. But, like, at least he makes the throws. At least he's trying to give his receivers a chance to make the big plays. And, you know, they made it a one-score game late in that game and had a chance. So, yeah, I just to me, this weekend, I think Josh Pate put it as simply as Texas is playing for their lives this season or this weekend. If they somehow miraculously find an offense and find a way to beat Oklahoma, they are still very much in the playoff hunt. But if they lose, fellas, I'm going to Lexington next week for Kentucky-Texas. I might be the only media member at that game. I mean, a three-loss Texas versus a bottom-dweller Kentucky next week, I mean, there's going to be nobody at that game or even care. I mean, Texas is playing for the Music City Bowl at that point. So,
Don't hate on the Music City Bowl, Chris. Don't hate on that Music City Bowl. It's very nice that time of year.
Well, I'm sure Hugh Freeze would take a Music City Bowl right now if you gave it to him. So
we prefer the Birmingham Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Outback Bowl, I'm sure. Who doesn't love Tampa, you know? So we're going to see what happens. But, yeah, it was pretty dire when I heard him put it that way. You know, Josh Pate put it that way. So, yeah, Texas is playing for their lives this weekend. If they lose, just go ahead and count them out of everything the rest of the year.
We got our buddy Chris Gordy with us here, the host of the Locked On SEC podcast with us on ESPN 106.7 in Auburn, Opelika. And that's a perfect segue into a loaded slate of SEC games this weekend. And we'll go out of order to stay with Oklahoma and Texas just for a moment on Red River, Chris, to get your thoughts and pick on this. Despite all of that we just talked about with Texas, they're still the favorite this weekend against the sixth-ranked team in the country. Is that crazy to you, or does Vegas know something that we don't?
That's the tough part, is you never know with this kind of thing. When that line is held firm in favor of Texas all week, the only thing I can think is that this whole John Mateer may return thing is just a smokescreen, and that it's going to be Michael Hawkins, and that the stud bettors are looking at it and saying, we don't think Michael Hawkins is good enough to do much of anything against Texas's defense. Now, on the flip side, Arch Manning against Oklahoma's offense or Oklahoma's defense. Oklahoma's defense is number one or two in just about every category. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, they're absolutely ridiculous in just terms of how they're playing, stifling defense so far. So it's going to take, I mean, Texas may have to open up the playbook, try some trick plays or something like this. It feels like it's a first to 20 wins this game, but you know, if you guys follow Eddie Radosovich on Twitter, he's covers Oklahoma. All week he's been giving out reports, you know, from on campus in Soonerland. And he reported Monday it was 85 degrees and sunny, and Oklahoma practiced indoors. And then they practiced indoors again on Tuesday and Wednesday. So they're clearly trying to keep this thing under wraps on who's going to be the quarterback. Here's the interesting part. John Mateer had surgery on his hand. If he can't throw very well or hasn't practiced throwing all week, I almost wonder, do they start Hawkins but bring in Mateer for packages where he can use his legs, because we know how mobile he is as a runner.
Sure.
You know, maybe you bring him in, have him hand the ball off to the running back, and then have a few plays where he tucks in and runs it. I just don't know how effective of a thrower he'll be right now as that hand continues to recover. So could be fascinating to see how it plays out, but I love Red River, man. I mean, it is a true 50-50 fan, you know, in that environment. It's 50% orange, burnt orange, 50% whatever the crimson color that Oklahoma is. But it's going to be a fun environment, and I'm so happy this is an SEC game, because these two teams hate each other. I mean, this is Iron Bowl light, you know, but it's both fan bases just absolutely hate one another. You know, they start throwing out the phrases, it's 342 and OU still sucks, or 342 and Texas still sucks. I mean, it's a fun rivalry game.
It's funny you mentioned that, because I was able to go to the last one that was in the Big 12, and got back and was asked by all of my buddies about, you know, the comparison of, well, how does that match up to Auburn, Georgia or Auburn, Alabama? And it really doesn't, because like what you're saying, half the stadium goes ballistic on every single play. Other than a four-yard run where both teams give their golf clap, half the stadium goes wild every single play. Texas right now a point-and-a-half favorite in that game on at 2:30 on ABC. But the game before that starts everything else off with Alabama and Missouri. Eighth-ranked, the Crimson Tide make their way up to Columbia, Missouri, to take on Eli Drinkwitz. Does Kalen DeBoer wear the black hoodie? Because if that's the case, I mean, that's the black hoodie of death. Can he defeat Missouri in their sixth straight game at home?
You know, that's, look, if he ain't wearing the black hoodie, then I'll go all in on Mizzou. I mean, that's just negligent at this point.
The line jumps based off of what DeBoer walks in with the walk of champions.
Yeah. I thought the note that Cole Kubrick put out this week was pretty fascinating, that if Alabama wins this Saturday, they will be only the fifth team all time to play three consecutive, you know, ranked SEC teams and win all three without a bye week. That's pretty hard to do. Three straight opponents, you know, ranked SEC opponents without a bye week and win all three. Bama would be just the fifth team to do that. So, look, Missouri's a really good team. I mean, Ahmad Hardy, think of this, guys. Mizzou just had a bye week. Ahmad Hardy still leads the country in rushing. I mean, it's not even just the SEC, the country in rushing. He's been that good, over 100 yards a game. You know, Bo Prabula, this is going to be a huge test for him. You know, he's been very good so far, but look, you played Kansas and you have not played somebody the caliber of Alabama. And what's fascinating about this Alabama team is, defensively, their front seven, this might be like the weakest front seven they've had in the last decade, but they're efficient. They get the job done. There's no superstars on that front seven yet, but they get the job done. They're very effective, and they did a great job of shutting out Vanderbilt in the second half last week. And Ty Simpson is playing great. I love what Eli Drinkwitz said earlier this week. He's like, look, Ty Simpson will kill you on third downs. You know, if you play zone and you play the pass, he'll kill you with the run. He'll take off and running because he's mobile enough. So he's playing fantastic, and it's pretty impressive to see after that week one debacle. He's been really, really good these last couple weeks. And so, look, I think a lot of Bama people I've talked to have said they think Bama loses this game. You know, Kalen DeBoer, when he's lost, it's been on the road. So, you know, if they're going to lose one, this one could be it. The problem is, if Alabama loses this one, you have no room for error the rest of the way. I mean, you basically need to run the table in order to make the playoff, because or root like hell for Florida State, that if you do have a third loss, that maybe the Florida State loss doesn't look so bad if Florida State finishes 10-2 themselves or something like that. But Mizzou to me is just very unproven. Like, I don't know what they are. They they've looked great, but they have not left the friendly confines of Como yet. And, again, they haven't really faced a good team yet. So this will be a big, big test for Mizzou, but at least they get them at home.
He is the host of the Locked On SEC podcast, Chris Gordy, with us on ESPN 106.7. To save some time, we won't make you talk about Wazoo taking a trip to Oxford or how LSU might put 100 on South Carolina. We got to get your thoughts before we let you go and let you have the stage, my friend, and tell the people in this town why Auburn will do the most Auburn thing of all time and lose two games in a disgusting way, but find a way to break the streak against Georgia on Saturday.
Well, I've said this all week, going back to last week. I'm going to stand by it. I'm standing firm that I think Auburn's offense wakes up and looks much better at home. I think too many people were judging them based off of what they did the last two road games, and it was road games against top 10 opponents on the road in the SEC. A lot of teams struggle in doing so. You're back home in the friendly confines of Jordan-Hare. I expect the offensive line is going to be better. We've addressed whatever hearing issues we have with offensive linemen. Hopefully that's fixed. And, Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton are just too damn talented to not get the football into their hands. So I think the Auburn offense wakes up, scores some points, this is probably Kirby's worst defense he's had in the last 5 years or so, just in terms of, you know, they're good, not great. So I think points are to be had here. Can Auburn execute and do it? Now, look, Auburn's offense can still do that. Can their defense get stops when it matters? You know what I mean? Like, you could lose a 27-24 game, score 24 points, but Georgia scores the go-ahead field goal in the final minutes, you know, and we're all left here sitting, well, okay, the offense woke up, but we still lost the game. So I don't know. I'm not bold enough yet to say that Auburn wins the game, but I think the offense wakes up. They're scoring at least in the 20s, if not, you know, if they can get the 30, I think perfect opportunity for Auburn to pull off the upset. So we'll see what happens, man. Look, Brock Bowers ain't walking through that door, all right? He ain't here to save him this time around. So
that's true.
I am very optimistic on the Auburn offense and Hugh Freeze, and I think it wakes up at home.
And funny enough, there's a large group of the fan base that, in a weird way, if that scenario plays out, Chris, to where if Auburn does come up short but you lose, you know, 30-28 or something like that, I mean, it would be, well, you didn't get it done, but at least the offense turned it on, and that would give the fans some confidence moving down the rest of the season.
Yeah, the tough part with that, though, is you'd be 0-3 in the SEC and 3-3 overall. I just, you know, Hugh Freeze, what are we talking, you know, where's job security at and all that kind of stuff? And, you know, you're really, then you're starting to find, can we find three more wins the rest of the way? And, you know, I know jokingly before the season, he's like, yeah, we know our goal. We want to get to a bowl game. Well, 6-6, I don't, you know, it's not going to get anybody super excited. Anything sub 6-6, though, if they go 5-7, 4-8, I think he's gone. So, but let's think positive, right? Let's think positive. The offense looks good. They get the big win over Georgia, and Auburn's on their way to a potential 10-2 type season.
Look at Chris Gordy being the positive one on the other end of the phone today. I'm proud of you, Chris. You must have had a good day at the office or something.
Well, it's just that I've heard so many people poo-poo on Auburn the last week, and I'm like, when that happens, when so many people are doing it, I tend to think the other way. What if this offense wakes up? What if Jackson Arnold gets going? What if all the offensive linemen are not hard of hearing? I think that's a good thing.
I think so too, man. We appreciate you, and it's a good thing to have you on our show, as you are every single week and have been for years. And I appreciate you, your friendship and your time each and every week. Tell people where they can find you, what you got going on with Locked On SEC. Guest picker coming up tomorrow by chance?
Yes. I don't know if you guys will know this guy. He's a local Louisiana celebrity and a viral sensation on social media. So we'll see if you guys know who it is tomorrow. But yeah, Locked On SEC, wherever you get your podcast.
Awesome, man. We appreciate you as always, my friend. Enjoy the day, enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you again next Thursday.
All right, thanks, fellas.
Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC. Check it out wherever you get your podcast, because he's having Theo Vaughn on the podcast tomorrow.
I was about to say, man, he's pissing off Alabama fans again.
The legend Theo Vaughn is going to be on Locked On SEC. Dude, could you imagine? There's no shot, but that would be awesome.
If there's one man that would be able to do it.
It is probably Chris. Yeah, it is. It is probably Chris. No, he's awesome, and seriously, he was positive about Auburn, and we joke with him, and he jokes with us and does it for fun, but he believes that Auburn can turn the offense on this weekend against a Georgia defense that is susceptible to some bigger plays. So
it's just unfortunate that their secondary is not what it used to be, and so the best way for Auburn to find success is throwing the ball deep.
Throw the ball deep, you say?
Or four-yard hitch routes. That's where Georgia gives up a lot of those as well.
I heard Georgia can't stop the run.
I did.
All right, we got to get to break. We'll take our final one, come back, and wrap it all up here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Thursday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Got about a minute or so before we get out of here, and I appreciate Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, all of our guests today on a jam-packed Thursday afternoon. Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, head coach Keith Etheridge of Auburn High School Football, and Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network all on today's show. We also talked a little bit more about the Georgia game, plus some of the other games going on around the SEC and more, which means tomorrow is Free For All Friday, where we will talk with Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports and ParamountSports.com, who went 4-1 last week. So we'll get his thoughts and his picks on the biggest games in college football.
Because we are now in
Locktober. We don't call it October. We call it Locktober. How many wrong team favorites are on the slate tomorrow?
Ooh.
I bet there's at least one. Maybe two. I've already looked at it. My prediction's two.
It's one because he picks Auburn.
Yeah, okay. He'll join us to start the show tomorrow. We'll talk Auburn, Georgia, make our picks for the 10 biggest games in the country, and then officially pick Auburn and Georgia. That's on Free For All Friday tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.